To succeed, just let go. This is Willie Horton, exploring how we must and can take control of our state of mind and transform our lives. You're very welcome.
Words have power. And I'm conscious of the fact that all too often in this podcast, I'm using negative words. We talk a lot about stress, frustration, annoyance, anger, depression, anxiety. The list is a good bit longer than that, but that'll do for now. Because words have power. And they exert a power in the natural world, and obviously we're part of the natural world, that we couldn't even begin to credit. Masaru Emoto's experiments with regard to how molecules of water react to words and emotions is a salutary tale in terms of the consciousness of the world around us and the consciousness of ourselves that remains hidden from ourselves when we are lost in the world of thought. Now, of course, it is necessary. It's part of the work that I do and have been doing for over 30 years to talk about things like anxiety, stress, frustration, and all that bad stuff. It's necessary for me to sit and talk with people to enable them get this stuff off their chest. It's cathartic for many people to have someone who will simply listen to them. But enough is enough. This week's episode contains messages of hope. And, you know, in a world gone crazy, we need hope. Now, before we go any further, I want to clarify what I mean by hope. Because if you've been listening to this podcast over the last 5 years, you will know that hoping for something to happen isn't going to make it happen. Wishing, hoping, wanting are all the things that stand in our way from getting what is best for us in our lives. As we said in an episode a few weeks ago, you get what you want when you stop wanting. So when I talk about messages of hope, I'm using the word hope in the context of enabling us to remember and remind ourselves that we have within us the power not only to uplift ourselves, discover our own consciousness, become aware and self-aware, unleash our own inner power. But in doing so, we have the power within to enable those around us do the same thing. Enable ourselves and those around us, change our world for the better. Because there is nothing little about our apparently little world. You and I are part and parcel of the wonderfully flowing universal energy machine. And how we allow our energy flow impacts the whole energy machine. So it isn't just that when we take control of how we use our energy and how we allow our energy flow that it impacts my experience of my life. It isn't just that in doing so, it impacts the experiences of the moment-to-moment life of those around me. It is that our little drop of calm in an ocean of chaos actually has an impact. You will have heard me refer before to a long-standing client of mine who runs a rather ramshackle pharmaceutical production facility in South America. It's an old production site. It's a creaking production site. It is a site where things can go wrong with great regularity. And because it is a place where the wheels can frequently come off, it is an environment in which chaos and panic would strike were it not for the fact that my friend comes in to work every morning with one intention in mind. She tells me her job is to spread the calm. How calm we are, or how chaotic we are, has an impact on ourselves and our health, those around us and the wider world. People who don't know themselves, people who perhaps dislike themselves or even hate themselves, or should I say dislike or hate who they think they are, their conceptual self, those kind of people create chaos in our world. From some of our previous conversations, I know that many of the people who listen to this podcast, and perhaps yourself included, have daily experiences, people like this, when you go into work and meet the bully. A bully creates chaos to make themselves feel better. Enough said, we could get buried in a conversation about the state of the world at the moment. Because as I said a minute ago, words of power. Let's look at the flip side. People who know themselves, people who are comfortable in their own skin, people who have experienced their own inner power through allowing their mind settle, become still, and experience the flow of their own energy. People like that spread calm, spread joy, and spread hope in the way in which I used the word a few minutes ago, in a world that is short on hope and heavy on anger. When I started studying psychology first, like I suppose most people studying psychology, I came at it from my own personal perspective. I was looking for evidence of how what I've just described to you actually works in practice. And I was particularly taken in the late 1980s by an experiment carried out in Washington, D.C. I mentioned this to a number of my early clients in the mid-1990s, and a couple of them said to me, you need to be careful quoting that, because the people who were involved in that research were the North American Transcendental Meditation Association. And I said, why? Because they said people think meditation is some weird kind of practice. People think that meditation is some kind of woo-woo thing associated with a couple of Eastern religions. Now, maybe people did think that at the time, but we know differently nowadays because so much research has been done in relation to what meditation does to our state of mind, our brain waves, so to speak, and the way in which our own energy flows in waves when we get out of our own way and park our thinking mind. Then again, as I said to those people in the mid-1990s, look at any research, look at any experiment in any field, and look at who is involved in setting up the research in the first place. They, like me when I started studying psychology in the first place, were looking for evidence that would support their perspective on how, in the case of the Transcendental Meditation Association, how they might transform this world of ours. That experiment was carried out in a convention center in Washington, D.C. in 1989. The Transcendental Meditation Organization had the goal of getting 4,000 people to meditate together in a convention center over a long weekend in Washington. The experiment was carried out in collaboration with the law enforcement agencies in the greater Washington, D.C. area. And the proposition that the experiment set out to prove was that the more calm people there are in a particular location, the less violent crime will be committed. Violent crime, in the case of this experiment, was defined as homicide, GBH and ABH. The experiment never reached its 4,000 meditators target. But as the number of meditators in the convention center climbed, so did the rate of violent crime in the Washington, D.C. area decline. The graph is almost a perfect X. There is an undoubted correlation between people spreading the calm and those around them feeling the calm. Now, at the time, I was taken by this experiment. I used it a lot in some of my early workshops in 1996 and 1997. But around 1998, somebody said to me, that's only one of a number of similar experiments around the United States. They quoted to me an experiment in Kentucky. I think it was Kentucky. The details aren't particularly important. But what happened is, again, a number of people got together to meditate together over the course of a weekend. And over the course of that weekend, the number of auto accidents declined in the area concerned. When we begin to spread the calm, the world feels the calm. Now, it would be interesting to have explored whether violent crime declined in LA or San Francisco or Seattle over the course of that long weekend in Washington, D.C. And obviously, after the fact, we can't do that. But the fact of the matter is, according to quantum physicists, that we are all connected non-locally. Now, even somebody who doesn't understand quantum physics will understand the phrase non-locally. We don't have to be in the same place to have an impact on others. And actually, just as I say that, this is one of the amazing things that I discovered when I started using Zoom in 2017. I was probably ahead of the curve in using Zoom. I was using Zoom long before everybody started using Zoom during the COVID lockdowns. I had been working for over 20 years in the field of psychology and in the field of what I might describe as positive psychology, helping people take charge of their own state of mind, feel the calm and spread the calm. Been doing it for over 20 years face to face. And I was a little reluctant at the time to embrace remote technology. But what I discovered was that in talking to people remotely via Zoom, there was a greater energetic connection. Now, I've discovered this increasingly over the last few years as I introduced the Psychology of Success online program, which replaced my face-to-face stuff over the course of the last 8 years. And I've been particularly taken by it over the last 3 years when I started doing the advanced meditation retreat for groups of six people at a time. The connection over the airwaves, so to speak, has been far more powerful than the connection and the energetic flow one feels and one gets in a face-to-face situation. And I do believe that possibly one of the main reasons for this is that when you're sitting in your own space on Zoom, you're comfortable in your own space. Other people aren't sitting around you looking at you. They might be looking at you on screen, but you're actually cocooned in your own space. You're more open. You're more ready to flow. And of course, science confirms that we don't have to be in the same place to have an impact upon each other. Indeed, we don't even need to be in the same place to have an impact upon ourselves. Let me explain. We talked at the beginning of this episode about how Masaru Emoto explored the impact that emotions and words have on water. When positive emotions were expressed to a glass of water, I'm being serious here, by the way, when positive emotions were expressed to a glass of water and the water freeze-dried, the frozen crystals of water looked like beautiful snowflakes, divine snowflakes, if you like. But when negative emotions were expressed to water and the same process undertaken, the resulting frozen crystals of water were chaotic. Goes back to the point that I was making a minute ago. People who don't know themselves, people who are out to prove a point, and actually really only to prove a point to themselves. So chaos in this world. But if you're at peace and you know yourself, then you're going to spread calm. You're going to spread calm to the water in your own body, Your body is made up 80% of water. You're going to reconfigure the structure of your DNA. There are experiments with regard to this. And not only are you going to reconfigure the structure of your DNA, you're going to do that moment to moment based on the state of your mind. The research in question started with the way in which any research into DNA takes place. Swabs were taken from the participants in the research. Swabs were taken away to a remote laboratory. And then the participants in the research together were encouraged to experience different emotions. And as they experienced different emotions together, their remote DNA in another location restructured itself according to the emotions they were feeling. This shouldn't really be mind-blowing stuff when we consider that, as I said a few minutes ago, quantum physics has it, that we are all non-locally connected. Indeed, the physicist John Bell in the 1960s proposed that two pieces of a subatomic particle, once joined, are joined forever. Now, before I go any further, let's remember the point that we were all part of one subatomic particle just around the time of the Big Bang. In 1987, the European Centre for Nuclear Research, otherwise known as CERN, about an hour down the road from where I'm sitting, proved Bell right by splitting a subatomic particle, sending the resulting two twins in opposite directions down a long underground tube, now known as the Large Hadron Collider, exerted an electronic force on one of the twins to change its spin, and the spin of the other twin remotely changed simultaneously, non-locally. This is the impact, first of all, I have on my remote DNA. This is the impact that I have on the people around me. This is the impact I have on the world. This is the impact you have on the world. If your mind is chaotic, you're spreading chaos. You're part of the problem. If your mind is calm, if you are at peace, regardless of what's going on in your life, and indeed regardless of the nonsense going on in the world at the moment, regardless of all that, if your mind is at peace, and by the way, peace of mind obviously only comes from the mind, comes from inside. It has nothing to do with what's going on around us. If your mind is at peace, you are spreading the calm. And you don't even have to think about it. You don't have to do anything other than be at peace. And obviously, for starters, experiencing peace of mind in your own life is going to transform your life. For a start, it's going to transform your brain. And anybody can do this. Science again and again has proved that the way in which we use our brains restructures the neural pathways and connections in the brain and changes the way the brain behaves. This all started, at least in adults, because developmental psychologists have known that this happens in children up to the age of 8 in any event, and they've known that for decades. But this really only started in terms of confirming how any of us can do this at any point in our lives. In the year 2000, 26 years ago, when a team of researchers in the UK wondered whether London cabbies, London taxi drivers' brains were shaped differently than other people's brains. Because at the time, and I don't know if it's still the case with GPS, but at the time, London taxi drivers had to learn what was known as the knowledge. How to get around London from A to B in all kinds of diverse and different ways, assuming perhaps that some of the main arteries in the city were blocked as a result of one thing or another. You studied the knowledge for a couple of months before you took your test, and an awful lot of people didn't actually pass the test. But what the research discovered is that London taxi drivers have a completely different shaped hippocampus than people who are not London taxi drivers. But more interestingly, they have a completely different shaped hippocampus as compared to London bus drivers. London bus drivers are simply running along a route. London taxi drivers have learned, stored, and are using the knowledge. This set off a whole chain of events in terms of neuroscience exploring how the adult brain restructures itself according to the way in which it is used. And this research was seminal in neuroscientists exploring the impact that meditation has on the brain. Because, you know, for decades, science has known that meditation reduces heart rate, meditation reduces blood pressure. These aren't things that go on in the brain, there are things that go on in the body. For a number of years, science has known that meditation, regular meditation I'm talking about, obviously, enhances the digestive and cardiovascular systems. And indeed, in the last 20 years, some of the issues that affect in particularly the digestive system have given rise to medical practitioners prescribing meditation. But what neuroscience discovered over the intervening period between the year 2000 and now is that meditation turns on your ability to focus properly. We've talked about the so-called attentional spotlight before. In turning on the attentional spotlight, and therefore, as a result of regular meditation, restructuring the attentional spotlight embraces the role for which it was made. As the conductor of the orchestra of those key pieces of the subcortical brain that enable you do what it takes to move forward in your life. Now, in evolutionary times, doing what it takes to move forward in your life was quite simple, surviving from one day to the next. And therefore, the key parts of the subcortical brain were designed to ensure that you were on your game, fully focused, when your life was threatened. But what recent research has shown is that meditation switches the functionality of those key pieces of the subcortical brain from just focusing on life-threatening situations to focusing on embracing and indeed creating life's everyday opportunities. I mentioned a few minutes ago that the research in 2000 with London taxi drivers focused specifically on the brain's hippocampus, because that's the part of the brain that stores both our spatial knowledge and, more importantly, our emotional response to what is actually going on. So in other words, in evolutionary times, it was the hippocampus that got us out of a difficult and life-threatening situation. First of all, because of the emotional response, otherwise known as the fight or flight or stress response, number one. And number two, the fact that the hippocampus is where we have stored our spatial knowledge. In other words, in a life-threatening situation, we would effectively, as I've mentioned before, have a 3D map of the quickest, safest, and least effortful route out of the danger which we were encountering. That now works for anybody who is meditating in exactly the other way. We don't need a life-threatening situation to know what's going on and know what the best thing is to do and know how we can do the best thing with least effort. All we need to do is be present in the same way as the present moment had all our attention when confronted by a life-threatening beast. Research now confirms again and again and again that regular meditation restructures the attentional spotlight, restructures the key components of the subcortical brain, and doing so changes the way in which they communicate with each other, so that in real time we actually know what's going on, know what's best to do, know how best to do it, and just go and do it. As I said a minute ago, anybody can do this. More recent research has confirmed that even though with age we experience cognitive decline, it's an inevitability. Now, I'm not talking about Alzheimer's or dementia, although perhaps I am. We all suffer cognitive decline as a result of age, but what has been discovered in recent research is that people who start meditating for the first time in their lives at 75 years of age, after having meditated regularly for 8 straight weeks, the neural pathways in their brain have started to restructure themselves, pre-existing stem cells that were still in a 75-year-old brain have started creating new neural pathways. And most importantly, this research discovered that as a result of this restructuring, regular meditation reversed the cognitive decline that is normally part and parcel of aging. Anybody can do this. You know, people have said to me over the years, oh, meditation doesn't turn me on. And I told you a story before about somebody who'd said that to me in a group of fellow meditators, and it transpired, having been questioned by some of the other members of the group, that the individual in question had never meditated in her life. And yet she was sitting there, I suppose, with the same hang-ups that people had in the early 1990s about meditation. She was sitting there saying that meditation never turned her on when she'd never actually meditated. So many people say, oh, I can't meditate. I always quote John Kabat-Zinn from the University of Chicago Medical School, the guy who is responsible for mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy, the 8-week program that is now available in many parts of the world, which is essentially a meditation program. I quote John Kabat-Zinn. If anybody ever says to me, oh, I can't meditate, I will quote him and say, well, if you can breathe, you can meditate. People only think they can't embrace a new way of living. People only think that they can't discover who they really are. People only think that they can't embrace their inner power and indeed unleash their inner power on a world that needs their inner power to flow freely. I mentioned a few weeks ago the Heart Math Institute in California, who are exploring and have been for a number of years at this stage the impact that your calm has on the whole world. Regularly, they organize so that meditation groups around the world meditate together at the same time, and they monitor that calm around the world and its impact on what is known as the Schumann resonance, the rate at which our world is vibrating. You don't just have an impact on your own life. And indeed, by the way, if you're not meditating and haven't taken charge of your state of mind, you pretty much have no impact on what you call your life in the first place anyway. But if you are taking charge of your state of mind, you just don't have an impact on your own life. Inevitably and immediately, you have an impact on those around you. Quick anecdote in that regard, because a number of years ago, I got a phone call before I was on Zoom from a pre-existing client who I hadn't heard from for a number of years, who wanted to do 6 phone sessions with me because he had just been appointed to a senior leadership position in the company for which he worked. I said, why do you want to do these 6 sessions? He said, well, I don't think I have the leadership qualities that my employers seem to think I have. I said, why would you second guess people who've already given you the job? Anyway, we had our first session. And then a week later, we had our second session. And he said to me, before we go any further, he said, my wife said to me at breakfast on Sunday morning that since our first conversation last week, I had become a nicer person. Now, I didn't want to know the details, but the point is she had noticed the calm that he was beginning to spread simply as a result of being calm. You see, we don't have to do anything major to change this world of ours. All we have to do is change our experience of this moment by turning up to it. It's horribly simple. Now, I know horribly is a negative word, and forgive me for using it, but it is horribly simple. And it is something that you and I can do today. Now, over the last few days, some of you may have noticed that I opened Psychology of Success online program to new participants over last weekend. And I won't do that again for a while, if I ever do it again, to be quite honest, because, you know, the response was such that one would question whether people are actually serious about taking charge of their state of mind. Your life actually depends upon it. And never mind anybody else for a minute. Never mind the people that you love. I know that's a horrible thing to say, but never mind the people that you love. Never mind the world at large. You know, you can continue wringing your hands and wondering where all the chaos is going to end. Never mind any of that. Surely you're worth looking after your state of mind. Surely you, when you do begin to look after your state of mind, will realize that actually you're the most important person in your life. And if you don't look after your state of mind, you're a danger to everybody else, yourself included. But why would I end an episode called Messages of Hope on a note like that? The world, your world, can change in the twinkling of an eye. Indeed, in the twinkling of an eye, the very structure of your energetic being changes, because we're vibrating in and out of existence 20,000 times per second. The world can change the moment you decide, I'm going to embrace experiencing how it feels to be present in the here and now. The only scientifically validated way in which you can do that is to meditate, and to meditate every day or most days. In doing so, you change the very structure of your being. You change the flow of your presence. You change the electromagnetic pulse that your flowing energy generates. You send out messages in photons of light as a result of the electromagnetic pulse that you do generate. You send those messages out into the universe. And the responsive universe, what quantum physics calls the underlying entity, is only sitting there waiting for you to do this so that it can respond. Wake up. Meet yourself in the here and now and experience the change that that will bring about.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. Hope you've got a little something to help you transform your life today.